Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to today's program. So glad to have you tuned in. Happy New Year, by the way. If we haven't mentioned that to you already, I'm Neil Stavem along with Ted Ross. And Ted, today we're going to review, I don't know if you have a family crest, anything like that.
I have an uncle that has one of those. That's okay. Like the shield thing,
yeah,
right?
Do you have something something written in Latin or German or?
Yeah, probably, and I don't recall what it is.
Okay.
it to heart.
All right, sure. Our conversation today is about, how do we actually pass on a life-changing legacy to our children? Hmm. And it seemed like something we ought to be doing here as we think about the first of the year. So, we don't know what this new year will bring, but let's make sure that we are building something that will last and passing it on to the next generation. I was thinking our guest today has, recommended that we even develop something, maybe a family mission statement or even a family catechism, what's the chief end of man? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. So can you think of anything that maybe a statement that sort of represented your family?
Well, I think of, in my house, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord is a common verse to go back to. Mm-hmm. But to take that a step further, to have a mission statement or a motto, that's a good idea.
Yeah. I was thinking, one that, I don't know that we said it a lot at home, but it's certainly, I think we probably referred to it, just an old saying, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without.
Yeah.
That was kind of the motto of the Stavem household, I think.
Yep.
My wife and I were talking about it last night, and she said, when she was growing up, her and her sisters often said, it is what it is. They'd come up with different ideas and say, I wish it was this. Be this way, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Live in reality.
She did, and she still lives there. So appreciate that. So today we'll talk a little bit about legacy, and I hope that your ears will kind of tune in to our conversation today, and it might be a way that you can do some thinking for the new year. It wasn't that long ago, Ted. We were talking about year-end giving and planning and things and sort of getting documents together. And this is really, we'll find it's more than that. But certainly we ought to be thinking about getting our documents together.
Right. You talk about connecting faith to life. I had a brief conversation about that over the holidays with my dad, just to clarify where things are. So very helpful.
So I want to just say, by the way, too, welcome. If you happen to be listening in Hartford, our brand new FM signal in Hartford at 94.1. I want to say welcome to you. Several new FM signals to the Faith Radio Network over this past year, 93.1 in Waterloo, 104.7 in Madison, 90.7 here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so if you're listening on any of those new signals, we're just honored to have you listening in, or maybe you're listening to the Faith Radio app. Thousands do. And you can find that Faith Radio Network app at your iTunes or store or Google Play.
Yep, either depending on your device. Also, if you are a new listener, we want to send a free welcome packet to you. Find information on that at the main page, myfaithradio.com.
All right, let's jump in to talk today, the intentional legacy with David McIlvaney. David is president and CEO of the McIlvaney Financial Companies, and he's a featured speaker on international TV and radio and financial seminars around the world, analyzing major events and their impact on the global economy and financial markets. He can be heard weekly on his market commentary with world leaders, bankers, economists, and renowned investors at McIlvaney.com. You may want to check that out. He's a Biola University grad and has traveled the world and has written a fascinating book called The Intentional Legacy, What You Want for Your Family, Why You Want It, and How You Get There. And one of the things that I want is to go visit David in person because he's in Durango, Colorado, which is one of the very nicest places in the country. David, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Ted. Wonderful to be with you today.
This is when we talk about passing on a legacy to our children, I guess the title of the book says The Intentional Legacy. Does that mean that we can be unintentional, and what does that look like?
Well, that's exactly right. Everyone leaves a legacy, but sometimes it is by accident, one that is somewhat tragic. And the more intentional you are about the legacy that you leave, I think the better the result. Now, oftentimes we think about what is at the end of your life in terms of the legacy that you leave, and very important is the whole process of getting there. And so what I would like to suggest is that when you reconsider legacy, it's in the context of what you are creating every day. So every detail of your family life gets factored into the kind of family identity and the kind of ethos that you're creating inside the family, and that happens on a daily basis. So really, it's not something that we want to have accidentally happen. It's something that we want to be by design. So a legacy by design is why we draw on that idea of intentionality. What is it that you want, Neil? What is it that you want for your family? What is it that you want for your kids? What is it that you want for your grandkids? The enduring resources, and of course we're expanding the definition of resources from just financial resources to things like character, to things like the exposures that they have in life. Do you want them to be wise? How do they gain that? These are the kinds of things that you want to promote and create. And I think you have a much greater probability of success if you give some real thought to what it is that you want to create as a legacy.
We oftentimes, of course, sort of get stuck on that it's only about wealth management. But as you said, it needs to be more than that. Is this something that, I mean, you are in the wealth management business. So was this something that as you worked with clients, you realized that, you know, they got their financial house in order, but everything else has fallen apart?
Well, Neil, that's exactly right. I mean, we're a second-generation family business in the precious metals and wealth management business, and we see instance after instance of people doing the right things when it comes to tax planning and taking care of a will and all of those kinds of documents. But what is missing is the heart within the family that needed to be tended to and cultivated and invested in very significant ways to make sure that the relationships that are there are whole and are mature. And when you don't have mature relationships, you know what you end up with at the reading of the will? A free-for-all for who gets what. And all of a sudden, people, you know, reject family identity and who we are as a group and look only to self-interest. So many times in our business, we see where if you don't tend to the other resources and manage those resources well, the intangibles, if you will, then all of a sudden the tangibles can actually become a real dividing point and something that's divisive within the family. So your best intentions of leaving a legacy, a financial blessing to the next generation, can end up being a curse if along the way you didn't cultivate the kind of ethos within your family that brings people together.
We talk about how, you know, those succeeding generations, it can sometimes be a curse. You talk about the sequence of many legacies, I think, from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves. Just say a bit more about that common trend.
Yeah, in almost every place around the world, there's this idea of shirt sleeves in three generations, where there is a founding generation, and then something does not get communicated or transferred from the first to the second generation, and lo and behold, by the third generation, you're having to start all over again. And to me, it's apparent that that's the case as a proverb in the context of financial creation. You create wealth in one generation, and typically by the third or fourth generation, it's completely gone. The character qualities that it took to create in the first place are not perpetuated. They're not recreated in each successive generation. And I think, quite frankly, Ted and Neil, the same thing can be said of a spiritual legacy as well. There are hard-learned lessons, life lessons, as you grow in spiritual maturity, that if those things are not talked about and communicated, you know what can happen. Two, three generations later, people really don't have a sense for who they are, what their spiritual identity is, what their legacy is that they've received from an earlier generation. These are things that have to be talked about. And so I do see the shirt sleeve to shirt sleeve theme, not only in the world of finance, but also in the spiritual side of things within the family context, of course.
Help us understand more about the family identity, because I think we think, well, we're okay, we're Scandinavian, or we're big family, small family, or I don't know. How do we understand what's included in family identity?
Well, I think that's a great place to start, to say, I'm German, I'm Scandinavian, and then you can fill in the blank. That in the biggest picture is a part of who you are, because you're receiving many of the character qualities and traits of either hardworking or diligent or trustworthy or all of the things that might be associated with a particular people group. But then it gets even more specific. Who are you as an individual family? And are there things that you care about as a family? What are the things that you delight in as a family? Are there certain things that just bring you joy and you do together? Maybe it's watching a football game and you do that every Monday night, and that is a part of one of your delights. Maybe instead you're a book reading family, and Saturday afternoons, rather than go outside, you find everybody's cozied up in the living room and you're reading your books together. I mean, there are delights that sort of are a character quality of your family. There's also disciplines that you've chosen to incorporate into your family, and all of these, again, tie into your family identity. So yes, in the big picture, you may be Scandinavian, you may be like me, Heinz 57, a little bit of everything. There's about 12 different nationalities blended into the McIlvany household. But the delights that you choose, the disciplines that you choose, the deeds that you choose, the way that you express gratitude and connect with those in your community, these things, delights, disciplines, and deeds, factor into the identity that you want to create and not just have on more or less an accidental basis. You had no say in what your heritage was, but you do have some say in the identity that you want to create and perpetuate.
How do we create and perpetuate a God-honoring legacy? We're going to talk about it in the moments ahead with David McIlvany. David serves as the president and CEO of McIlvany Financial Companies, and there are a variety of services that they provide. He is also an international speaker and is a Biola grad and also an associate member of Keble College, Oxford University, where he studied philosophy and political theory. He's written a great book called The Intentional Legacy. It's what you want for your family, why you want it, and how to get there. And we will have a couple of copies that we can give away to that as well, and tell you about another opportunity to actually get the first chapter of the book as well. We'll do that after the break. I want to jump out of our phone lines, too. If there's maybe a question you've been wondering about, dealing with about legacy, passing things on to the next generation, love to have you join in the conversation. It's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484, and we'll have David share a bit about his story coming up in a moment. Family legacies fail. Why do they succeed? Will your children value their legacy? We're talking about it today with David McIlvany. David is the president and CEO of McIlvany Financial Companies. It's an investment advisor located in Durango, Colorado, and he travels the world speaking and has written a wonderful book called The Intentional Legacy. It's what you want for your family, why you want it, and how to get there. And, David, I'm going to have you share a little bit about your story in a minute. But I know that you do have people that are responding today do have an opportunity to get the first chapter of your book if they go to your website, right?
That's right. If you'd like the introduction and first chapter of the book, a little teaser, if you will, go to davidmcilvany.com. The last name is McIlvany.com. And at davidmcilvany.com, you'll be able to request chapter one and the introduction, and hopefully that is an intriguing little introduction. But what it begins telling is basically the breakdown in our family unit. We're a second generation family business, and today I can say that we've been we're now on the other side of a long, enduring, redemptive process. But there was a time when there was a lot at stake, and it didn't appear that the legacy that is in motion today was going to be in motion. And you know, more than broken bank accounts, it's broken hearts that are the cause of the loss of legacy from one generation to the next. And that's where I started. A broken relationship with my father, anger directed towards God when my grandfather died and I didn't understand it. And that led ultimately to me as a young man in my teenage years running away from home and then subsequently being sent away from home to a youth ranch for troubled kids. And, you know, believe it or not, in the first few weeks that I was there, my role, my task was to take care of the pigs. In a very interesting twist on the story of the prodigal son, there I was away from my family. And, you know, the first chapter of the book goes into how I did return home and experienced a tremendous amount of trouble yet again. I was not quite through my rebellious phase, but found redemption in this brief conversation with my father, where he extended a real olive branch. He extended forgiveness to me when what I deserved was actually to be in big trouble for something that I had just done. And he extended that forgiveness to me, and it opened my eyes to who I was and the needs that I had to grow and mature and to live a completely different life. So just there in the first chapter, it really kind of sets the stage for the defining things that I think need to be in the context of family life, which include a redemptive ethic and really an openness to forgiveness and redemption in all relationships.
Well, say more about that, because you say successful families are redemptive. I think all of us, you know, got... you know, families have their ups and downs, and not all of us are from the best upbringing. So what does it mean to be a redemptive family?
I think the first thing that means is to capture a vision for what God wants for you. And yes, there's lots of things that happen that are less than ideal in the context of family life. Many disappointments, many things that you'd say, well, maybe dad works too many hours at the office, or maybe this was a promise that didn't quite come through. Whatever it may be that has broken your heart or broken a relationship, there is a way through it. And that way through it is, I think, by capturing a vision of what God has designed for us as individuals and what we can create and experience in the context of family life, which leads us to, can we, as broken as we are, pick ourselves up together and in arm in arm move forward? Can we find forgiveness? Can we find redemption? Can we find healing? And when someone has done something wrong to you in the family context, how do you work towards bringing healing back into that relationship? Because again, I look from a wealth management perspective, and I see so much dysfunction in the family context, and the tools that people need are tools that are elucidated, are so obvious in the Bible, and yet where do we learn about forgiveness? Where do we learn about healing of relationship? When something is broken, how do we learn how to fix it? And we do find it in Scripture. The best example is we are not perfect people, and yet God died for us. He loved us while we were yet sinners. And that is, I think, what goes into a redemptive ethic. You love people in your family even though they are not perfect, and you try to see beyond their imperfections to what God has designed them to become. And you have that vision of who they will be as a mature person, who they will be as an intellectually mature, an emotionally mature, a spiritually mature person, not necessarily the person in front of you. And believe it or not, that vision of who God created them to be is so powerful in informing the direction of that relationship.
Do you, you mentioned, you know, Scripture is where we learn about healing and forgiveness, but is this about, you know, reading the prodigal son story with maybe legacy eyes, or are there other examples that you have looked to over the years that have helped you in terms of crafting an intentional legacy?
You know, I think when you look, when you start at the beginning of the Bible and go all the way to the end, you say, well, what was the purpose of creation in the first place? You know, if we hold a certain sort of orthodox Christian beliefs about the Trinity and the creation of the world, God is sharing himself selflessly. He's inviting us into relationship. He's inviting us into relationship. We get to enjoy God forever. And that invitation into relationship, I think, underscores the importance of togetherness, the importance of relationship. I'm telling you, in the context of family, so many little things come in that create seeds of bitterness, that create envy from one brother or sister to another, and don't allow for relationship. And to me, from the beginning of Scripture to the very end, you've got a story of redemption and healing, and it is God's invitation into relationship. It's the imperative of relationship. And the family context is where we get to work out some of our rough edges as human beings, imperfect as we are, figuring out how to do this thing called relationship. And so we have the best example in Christ in terms of forgiveness and restoration of relationship, but the laboratory work is in your living room, is in your dining room, is at the kitchen table, where the stuff of life happens.
If you're single, you're divorced, you're estranged. I mean, does that mean that your legacy will be tarnished, or if we aren't intentional, are we simply going to just pass on the kind of legacy that our parents passed on to us?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because there is this sense that people feel like, well, maybe I'm just determined to live out the same kind of life that my father or my grandfather had passed on to me. Or if you're not married, as you say, or divorced, what does that mean in terms of sort of a determined future? And I'd say that there's absolutely nothing in your life that is determined. You have choices to make, and this is where. What we try to do in one chapter of the book is look at the baggage that we have from past generations and how we deal with the baggage that we have from past generations. Being set free from that baggage, being respectful of earlier generations and saying, look, we received both blessings and baggage, and we don't have to be weighed down by the baggage, and we can receive all of those intangible and tangible blessings from a previous generation. And now, charting a course into the future, it is a question of prayerfully considering what we need to do to make that legacy a different legacy, an improved legacy. And I don't think that life events, as tragic as they may be, whether it's the death of a family member or a divorce or what have you, have any real bearing on the legacy that's created. Because here's the reality. We all have experienced disturbance in our life. And if we haven't, we will. Because you've got health crises, you may have moral failure. What if you're attacked by a robber in the street? There's natural disasters. Have you ever lost a job? I mean, these are crises that may, in that moment, seem like they are upending the legacy that you're creating. And I'd say, no, a vision of the future takes you well past that moment of disturbance and moment of crisis.
We're going to do a little reverse engineering here in the moments ahead as we talk about building a life-changing legacy for the next generation. What you want for your family, why you want it, and how to get there. This is a subtitle of David McIlvaney's book, The Intentional Legacy. David's president and CEO of McIlvaney Financial Companies. You can go to davidmcilvaney.com to get a free download of the first chapter. It's McIlvaney, davidmcilvaney.com. More with David coming up. You can join us with your phone calls as well at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We know it to be true, but of course, life, getting caught up in the daily life, we sort of forget that, life is short, and we do want to live it well. We do want to pass on a legacy, a life-changing legacy to our children, to the next generation. What does that look like? Well, father, entrepreneur, and second-generation business owner David McIlvaney is drawing from more than 50 years of collective family experience in the wealth management industry to answer the questions, why do family legacies fail? Why do they succeed? And what will your children value about your legacy? We're talking the intentional legacy with David McIlvaney today. And David, you know, as we were just talking during the break, you know, if you have children, I mean, life is busy anyway, but especially if you have children, you're just kind of living day to day and trying to keep track of it all. And pretty soon it's, you know, you're a grandparent. This listener asked the question, says, I raised my children in a Christian atmosphere, but somehow it got lost in translation to my grandchildren. And as their grandma, how can I keep a legacy of faith going in their lives? She says her son says that maybe his daughter is too young to understand the Christian faith, but she wants to help him suggest otherwise. So let me just let you answer that question as a way to how could we get started if we haven't been living intentionally?
You know, I don't know that anyone is too young to experience or recognize the Christian faith, because what we're really talking about is the Christian life. And the Christian life is something that is full of joy and is, I think, the most appealing life imaginable. And that makes sense to a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old. What are the things that define your life together as a Christian family? How do you spend time at mealtimes? What are the things that you talk about? What are the things that you celebrate? What are the things that are infused with enthusiasm and excitement and adventure? I mean, the nature of the Christian life is absolutely compelling, absolutely compelling. And I think it is appealing to a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 20-year-old. And it may be later in life that you find that the articles of faith begin to make sense to an older child. But you know what? The realities of faith, the things that we experience in life together, never too early to start, never too early to start. And I think as a grandparent, you look and you say, well, how do I facilitate that? A lot of that does relate to the details of life and how you engage with your kids and grandkids. You still have the opportunity, whether you're a parent or a grandparent, to craft a unique cultural identity. And that's the things that you talk about. That's the things that you love to do. We've talked about, you know, mottos and creeds and family codes, and those relate to the things that we believe and hold to be true. We've talked a little bit about in the earliest part of our time this morning, the things that define a family. My 4-year-old daughter knows that we don't quit. We don't quit as a family. And last year when we were skiing, you know, she fell down, and the first thing that came out of her mouth was, "Daddy, I got to get back up because we're McIlvanys and we don't quit." And it you would be surprised the kinds of things that by osmosis our children and grandchildren learn, and it becomes the glue. It becomes the glue for our family legacy, and that is, who are we? Who are we? What is our identity? I think that's so critical in terms of legacy glue.
You, in fact, didn't suggest a family catechism, but I guess this is all going to take a little time to just pause and reflect, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, and that's one of the things that we must do. We live day to day sort of according to the tyranny of the urgent. Life gets busier and busier and busier. In the modern world, you'd think with all of our conveniences, we should have more and more time, free time, and yet we have less and less time. We check 1,000 emails a day or have 32 texts to respond to, and it seems like every second of every day is squeezed. And it's so necessary to stop, to pause, to reflect, and to ask a basic question: what do we want out of life? Where are we going as a family? What are the things that we want to prioritize, and how do we make that happen? How do we make that happen as a couple, as a grandparent? And frankly, it doesn't matter if you have a family or not. On your own, what do I want for myself? To stop and pause and begin to reverse engineer and say, from those highest ideals and hopes and expectations, how do I work back to where I begin today? And that's what I hope, because every one of us wants to hear, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." And if we want to hear that, what does it mean exactly? A life well lived? What does that look like in the day-to-day? What are the individual little choices that cumulatively come to that kind of a you know, a statement from our Lord and Savior? Well done, my good and faithful servant.
In you know, people listening in say, well, is this a book that has you're into wealth, you know, wealth management is your work, is your business, so is this there's tools and tips on how to set up an estate plan, or is this just a matter of having a, we've got our, you know, our legacy portfolio, but we've got these other portfolios, or give us a sense of, I guess, the kind of framework for building this and, you know, the areas we want to include.
Yeah, so what I do is I contrast the usefulness of hard structures, things that are used by wealth management practitioners such as myself, and soft structures, which any individual can and should employ and can't really be addressed by the pros. So we, you know, anyone who has a good accountant and a good lawyer and a good asset manager is on their way towards addressing the hard structures in terms of a wealth management strategy, looking at an intergenerational project and effort. But the soft structures are really what take place inside the family context. This comes back to creating a certain ethos, creating an environment where there's buy-in, where you've got kids and grandkids that are like, I want in. I want this. This is beautiful. This is fun. I love this family. This is what we do during Christmas. This is what we do during New Year's. This is what we do together as a family. What are the things that define your delights? What are the things that, again, going back to the delights, the disciplines, and the deeds, these feed into soft structures which tie hearts and minds together and allow for an intergenerational work to be accomplished. Yes, there's room for hard structures. That's the legal, that's the tax planning, but I'll be honest with you, that's pretty textbook stuff. And there's really no reason for me to address it except for maybe a chapter and a half in this book, because it's already been treated so well. What I find in the literature is a lack of attention given to the soft structures, because ultimately, if you're not tending to the hearts of your children, your grandchildren, or even your own heart, that's what's setting you up for legacy disaster.
And without buy-in, that's the outcome, isn't it? I mean, we have to have buy-in for this to really be effective.
That's exactly right. What is compelling about your family life? What is compelling about your family life? Have you ever thought back, just sat back and said, as an outsider, if I were observing this family, an alien comes to this world and says, what is this family doing? Wow, that's neat. That's interesting. Why do they do that? If you could take the third-person perspective on your family and ask the question, what is compelling about our family life? What is it about our Christian life and the expression in our community in terms of the deeds, the things that we're involved in, whether it's in the church or extra, you know, outside the church, parachurch type commitments? What is it that's compelling? And what has that next generation saying, I am so grateful to be a part of this, because I know I'm a part of something bigger than just myself, and actually this family is even a part of something bigger than itself. That's, I think, where buy-in comes in, where people see a compelling story.
Well, you talked about your daughter saying, you know, McIlvaney's get back up when they fall down. You also talk about, I mean, there's a value of books in your life and experience. So say a bit more about the legacy of books.
Neil, we are treasure hunters for the transcendent. And you know, when we went to the break and there was that little tagline for your radio program, not just information, transformation, I'll be honest, that's what I want to put above my family library, because it's not just about information, it's about transformation. And I don't know which jewel is going to be discovered on which page and which chapter and which book, which may transform the life of my children, which may transform our little city here in Durango. But ideas matter. And ideas matter not just because they are information on a page, or that we are somehow brains in a vat and it doesn't, you know, we're just collecting data. No. Ideas matter because truth matters, and truth transforms. Truth transforms. So for us, books are a wormhole into a universe of ideas which hold the potential to not only transform our lives, but change the world.
Encouragement today from David McIlvaney. We're talking the intentional legacy. David, we've got just a few minutes left. We want to go about building that that identity, reverse engineer. Is there a step one that must happen? And then, you know, maybe where are the resistance points or the setbacks that often come?
You know, I think the resistance points are, boy, this just seems like a big deal, and I don't know if I can even begin. Where do I begin? And I think the first place is to recognize in the first place, none of us has all the answers. None of us has all the answers. And to just get down on your knees before God and say, Lord, where do I begin this process? I realize that I've not lived a perfect life. I realize that I've disappointed people in different ways and at different times, and I want to do better. And I need your vision, because I don't want to throw my shattered vision of what a human can be into the mix. I need your vision for what you created me to be, for what you created my grandson to be, for what you created my daughter to be, because that's what I want to be a part of, the co-creative process. How do I support what you're already doing? How do I get out of the way of what, by your grace, you already have in motion? And I think getting down on your knees and saying, God, I need a vision for the future, and I need a vision for who you created each individual in my life to be, and I want to treat them. I want to treat them just like you treat them, with a vision, not for who they are today, messy, broken individuals, but you know, I don't know if you guys have read C.S. Lewis's The Weight of Glory, but there's this idea that there is so much more that we have no imagination for, and I think that is built into each one of us as we reflect the image of God. Do we have that vision of ourselves? Do we have that vision of the individuals around us? Are we engaged in the process of creating family legacy informed by what God sees? And if we see what he sees, then we're on the right path. And now it's just a question of, okay, we've talked about reverse engineering. We've talked about crafting and almost being a curator of life. But here's the reality. A man makes his plans. The Lord directs his steps. Okay, so we will make these plans, and then we ask for God to graciously direct everything that we do in the context of family life, to be able to discover the life and the potential in each of the people that are around us.
And he pours out his blessings to generation after generation, and this is a way that we can be a part of God's big story as well, something bigger than just ourselves and our family. We're talking the intentional legacy with David McIlvaney from McIlvaney Financial Companies in Durango. You can find out more at davidmcilvaney.com, and actually if you go there you can download, get a copy of the first chapter of the book, sign up for that, and we'd be honored to have you connect with David, and we look forward to maybe a chance to visit later down the road. David, thanks for the good conversation today.
Neil, Ted, thank you so much for having me on as a guest.
The intentional legacy, what you want for your family, why you want it, and how to get there. David McIlvaney today on Connecting Faith. Surrender. Say, Lord, what do you have for me, for my family, and how can I pass that on for the generations to come? Talking generations today, leaving a legacy, but you know that starts with living today fully and completely. And as I had a chance to talk with David McIlvaney, Ted, I was thinking about a conversation I had a while back with Robert D. Smith, who has overseen the career of New York Times bestselling author Andy Andrews. So he does a lot of his scheduling. And he's also a private consultant to a number of best-selling authors and speakers and such. And he's written an interesting book called 20,000 Days and Counting, The Crash Course for Mastering Your Life Right Now. And the day for change is today. Yes. It's more simple than you realize.
Very appropriate considering the time of year with New Year's resolutions and everything. Let's give a listen.
Talk about the 20,000 days and counting. Did you actually sort of sit down and count up your days?
That was also an accident, Neil, in that when the smartphones, the iPhone came out, and we started downloading these apps, one of the guys in my office simply suggested downloading a countdown calendar. Now, I did, and this app, you simply look, and it tells you how many days till the next Christmas, how many days till New Year's, or whatever date you put in the future. I simply wondered, does it work backwards? And I put in my birth date. 5/5/55, and up popped the number of days I had been alive as of that day. I was shocked. I'd never seen my life in days. You always think in years or decades. And at that moment, I had lived about 19,930 days. And I thought then, I'm going to do something to celebrate on my next big number, which was 20,000 days. And that's where all this came from.
So talk about that celebration, because that has led to a real confirmation, I guess, of your life direction, right?
Well, that morning, I was very aware that it was going to be on a Friday, and I was very aware that that week was coming up, but I was very busy. But I woke up that morning, that Friday morning, my 20,000th day, and I said, this is the day. There was such intense excitement, and I keep a bag packed to leave on a moment's notice. I literally got my card. I've traveled all over the world, and I have master plans and people involved in helping do schedules. But that day, I literally drove away from my house not knowing where I was going, where I was stopping or staying. And I ended up at one of the brand name hotels, the leading hotels of the world, a small boutique hotel. I checked in not exactly knowing what I was supposed to be doing. But I sat down and felt an overwhelming gratitude of having lived that long, thinking back on Paul, who had died when he was in ninth grade. And I simply sat down and wrote an email to Andy Andrews and his wife, Polly, thanking them for being in my life, that I was overwhelmed with the gratitude. I came up with five things based on scriptural principles, and I simply wrote this in a rather long email, and I sent it to them. Then I thought of somebody else, Neil, that I felt gratitude that they too were in my life. I did this, a personalized email, over and over and over. Actually, it was for the next 18 hours. I wrote to 48 of my closest friends with the subject line, 20,000 days and counting, and told them this story. That email, as you know, is reprinted in the book.
Let's talk about the book. Is it about simply living life with gratitude? Is it about looking back, or is it, it's about looking ahead?
I think it's all of what you just said, because first of all, if I'm still alive and many people not sure why they're here, what God's called them to do, what they're supposed to do next, all of that is covered in the book. But I think the principles can and will stay with you for a lifetime. There's a principle in there about many people don't know what to do like today to get some major project going. And everybody's got something they're working on. It could be a future wedding. It could be writing a book. It could be producing an album. And they're kind of frozen in getting this thing done. One way that I have encountered making things happen is simply by asking only two questions. One, what's important now? And number two, simply, what's next? Do you realize, Neil, those two questions will keep your to-do list from never ending? You will always know what to do. Now, it might be, if you're a mom or dad, to simply go do dinner. It might be go to the baseball game. There's a variety of life situations and family things that take precedent over work. It's not all about work. It's about living this day to the ultimate for God.
I'm sure as you've traveled and experienced and had an opportunity to speak to people about this topic, you realize that many find themselves kind of sleepwalking day to day, right? Or just stuck in a routine or passively letting life kind of pass them by.
Yes. Yes. And obviously, you don't want to do that. You don't want to look back with regret. You don't want to say, boy, I wish I had done this. And most of this, Neil, can be countered simply by planning, by getting a calendar out, and by breaking life down into simple chunks of time, like 15 minutes. Most people overestimate what they're going to do in the next year and totally underestimate what they can accomplish in the next 15 minutes. And literally, if it's even, I remember when I was in high school, a teacher asked me that had given the class an assignment to do a term paper weeks before then. And he walked by my desk and simply said, Robert, how's your term paper coming? And I remember looking up and saying, I haven't started on it yet. And he looked and he said, Robert, starting is half finished. tonight, before you go to bed, start on this term paper. Now, I realize that even now, at the end of our conversation, at the end of your show, that anybody can sit down and with the next 15 minutes literally time themselves, do something towards their major goal. And no matter what it is, if it's like writing a book, you can, in 15 minutes, come up with 10 possible titles. You could come up with the chapter titles of 10 different chapters. You might come up and just simply write a synopsis, a paragraph about what the book's going to be. All of that can be done in 15 minutes, and usually, you know, it will start momentum or a feeling of excitement to continue on. Usually, my 15-minute chunks will go into 45 or even 90 minutes at a time that I'm working on projects.
The book we're talking about is 20,000 Days and Counting, the crash course for mastering your life right now. It's from Thomas Nelson. Robert D. Smith is the author. Robert, we got just a couple minutes left. One of the short little chapters you talk about is focusing your morning vision. I mean, just give us some encouragement for getting up and getting started. What does your day look like when you get started?
Wow. You know what? Actually, Neil, it starts the night before. Many people, you've heard this, said, wow, they must have got up on the wrong side of bed. I actually believe they went to bed on the wrong side. So I think your morning should start the night before with what you put in your mind. So simply reading some scripture, reading something positive from a book, having a positive conversation with somebody, all these things, and of course prayer, just simply sleeping on that will start your day with excitement. Number one, you weren't guaranteed you were going to make it through the night. So when you wake up, you did. God's given you another chance. You've got more to do, more to see, more people to influence by the simple things you do of being you. And it's so important, Neil, to smile at everybody. Look in the mirror and practice before you go out in public and keep that smile on your face.
Oh, Robert D. Smith. He's motivating.
Yeah, a lot of energy.
Yeah, I like him. 20,000 Days and Counting is a book that he wrote here a couple of years ago. The Crash Course for Mastering Your Life Right Now. Is the day for change is today, and it's more simple than you realize. And he gave us some good advice. Robert D. Smith is a consultant, and he also oversees the schedule of bestselling author Andy Andrews and a number of other speakers and authors and the like, and giving us some good advice today about, you know, starting that new legacy today.
That's right, and then persevering toward those goals, too. And, you know, speaking of persevering, we have a contest going on that just launched. You can enter at myfaithradio.com. You want to say a word about that?
Yeah, but this is about how to finish strong in the race of life. We're doing this. We've got an opportunity. We've got some books from Greg Laurie called Run to Win, and I think we got dozens of copies, but we're going to give those out if you just sign up for that, because we moved to a new time. Greg Laurie now on at It's New Time, A New Beginning is on at 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern. And so to celebrate and make you aware of that schedule change, we've got Greg Laurie's book, Run to Win, How to Finish Strong in the Race of Life. And that's our drawing going on this month. So sign up for that. You can sign up online, myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. And you can also check out the podcast for today's interview as well. If you missed part of that, we'll get that posted here in just a bit. And you want to hear maybe the full interview with Andy Andrews, you can find that as well. And a reminder, too, by the way, that Greg Laurie, A New Beginning, heard weekdays now at 10 a.m. Central Time. And that means that we have a new program on at coming up after this program called Destined for Victory.
I listened to a part of this yesterday, and it's very inspiring.
Yeah. Paul Shepherd is a gifted communicator, a very energetic pastor and teacher, and I know you're going to appreciate Paul Shepherd, Destined for Victory. I want to encourage you to make a point to listen in. That comes up here right after the news, right after this program. So stick around for that and make a point to listen. Add it to your regular lineup. Destined for Victory coming up here with Paul Shepherd in just a few minutes. And then join us tomorrow. We're going to talk rational faith. Joe Bender on Connecting Faith talks with the philosopher Stephen Davis. We're going to talk about rational faith, a philosopher's defense of Christianity. That's all ahead here on Connecting Faith. Heard every day on Faith Radio. Thanks for listening. Find out more about us at myfaithradio.com.